Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. 2 weeks on, Haiti is still digging out, and the United States is involved in a big way. Aid pouring in, troops on the ground. What is the U.S. commitment, the U.S. responsibility to a nation that was deep in crisis even before the quake hit? Who takes the lead in the reconstruction effort? The U.S., the U.N., Haitians? And how does this relationship play out years down the road? This hour on Point, Haiti and the U.S. after the earthquake. You can join the conversation. What should the United States' commitment here be? Reconstruction, rebirth, anything it takes, and for how long? You can also comment at our website, onpointradio.org, or on Twitter and Facebook at onpointradio. With us first today from Port-au-Prince, Haiti, is Damien Cave, Miami Bureau Chief for the New York Times. Damien, thanks very much for being with us.
Sure, my pleasure.
So tell us how this aid effort is going. I'm reading about people still being pulled from the rubble just in the last 24 hours. A guy pulled out by the 82nd Airborne out of Fort Bragg. But at the same time, I read here, Damien, the UN relief coordinator saying that only 500,000 Haitians have received food and 2 million need it.
I mean, I think that the aid picture here is really kind of a patchwork. At times, in certain places, you see food being handed out in an organized way and water and people lining up completely peacefully. And then you'll go to other areas of the city and they haven't received anything. And they've put up giant signs in their neighborhood saying, we need help and SOS. And so I think it's very hard to get to this many people because of the logistical concerns, but it's pretty clear that they're definitely not getting to everyone who has needs.
Are people saying we're doing as well as could be done? We're falling short? Is there self-assessment going on in the aid community?
The UN said yesterday that they're starting a couple of major assessments, and I don't think that at this point it's really clear, you know, whether or not they're doing everything they possibly could or what the hindrances are. I mean, it's a really challenging environment. I don't think that can be stressed enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know, streets are blocked. There's huge fuel shortages. There's not enough transportation. You know, the government is minimally involved in certain ways. So I do think that, you know, whenever I go over to some of these compounds or whenever I see these aid workers, they are working nonstop and working very, very hard. It's just that the scope of the catastrophe is so far beyond their capacity.
Describe the streets of Port-au-Prince for us now. We've all seen the block after block of more or less leveled buildings in portions of the city. Is that widely the scene? Are people beginning to move back into those crumbled buildings for shelter? What is the street scene?
You know, yesterday, for the first time, I saw someone going around with spray paint and marking the buildings that would be demolished. And I have to tell you, there's more on most streets, there are more buildings that need to be demolished than there are ones that are standing and that can be lived in. Most of the people are still living in the streets, even if they could move back into their buildings. They're too afraid. I mean, we've had aftershocks day after day. Yesterday, there were a handful of other tremors. So part of it is psychological, and part of it is just that no one really knows if their house is safe or if another small tremor will knock it down on top of them. I mean, at this point, the streets are full and the houses are empty.
Who's in charge of the relief effort?
That's a good question. I think that's something that continually comes up, and you sort of get mixed messages depending on who you're talking to. I mean, I think that the UN is trying its best to be the hub of activity that can bring everyone together, but it's hard to tell exactly how well that's working. You know, the Haitian government at times tries to project that it's doing more than it possibly can be doing, and the UN sort of plays along with that. And then the Americans are here sort of trying to keep a smaller footprint, but it's hard to know behind the scenes how much influence they're exerting. In the early days, it appeared that there was no one in charge. And even now, with so many different aid groups here, it's very hard for the UN or anyone else to even know what groups are doing. So the chains of command are still confused, and communication up and down the chain is really difficult. So you have lots of groups that are looking for some kind of approval or trying to tell the UN what they're doing, and then when it takes too long, they just go out and do something. So it's kind of hard. This is why it's hard to get a comprehensive picture of how the aid efforts are actually going, because there's so many players doing so many different things.
Is there any evidence of a Haitian government in operation?
Increasingly in the past 2 days, there are. see the helicopters overhead. There, you know, I've seen food giveaways from the Haitian government on the streets. There was basically a school lunch program that has been transformed into just basic food delivery. I saw them handing out beans and rice a couple days ago. There are, you know, workers on the streets cleaning up that are Haitian government workers. There is a little bit more of the government presence than there was even a week ago. You know, it's still, you know, not fully what you might see in another country, but it is there. And I think that one thing that people have to remember is that while the government was dysfunctional before the earthquake, it did provide certain services. It was not Somalia here. And so getting the government up and running again is something that's a priority for the United States and for the UN, and, you know, slowly it seems to be happening. That said, there's a lot of frustration among Haitians with the government. I mean, you can't underestimate how frustrated they are.
And in terms of the international presence there, in terms of the international manpower, person power, what portion is American at this point? Do you have any idea?
I don't know what the numbers are, but I can tell you that you still see people from all over the world here. You know, whenever you go to an aid tent or anywhere else, you'll hear multiple languages. You know, the Americans are sometimes more visible because they're driving around in Humvees if they're soldiers, but it doesn't feel as though this is an entirely American operation, or, you know, that this is something, you know, I spent a year and a half covering the war in Iraq. It doesn't feel like that. The Americans are here, but it seems as though they're working along with many other players.
And from your conversations with Haitians there in Port-au-Prince and perhaps beyond, what are their expectations, Damien? Who do they think is going to lead the recovery of Haiti? How long do they think, and how deeply the international community, the Americans, will be involved?
You know, I've talked to several Haitians who have said things to me like, don't give the money to my government, they'll steal it. You know, we want somebody else to be in charge. We don't care if it's the Americans or the Canadians. We just want someone else to be in charge because we don't have faith in our government. Someone even said to me yesterday that they were maybe hoping that Haiti would become a protectorate or a commonwealth like Puerto Rico. So at this point, they're really just, they just want to see things get done. And I think that there's a lot of distrust in the Haitian government's ability to do it. So, you know, They're pragmatists at this point. They just want their country rebuilt, and they don't really care who does it as long as it's done well.
Damien Cave of the New York Times joined us from Port-au-Prince in Haiti. Damien, thank you very much.
Sure.
At a briefing on Monday in Port-au-Prince, U.S. Ambassador Louis Luck, U.S. Special Coordinator, I should say, for Relief and Reconstruction, was asked whether the United States has a planned date for leaving Haiti.
We're not really planning in terms of weeks or months or years. We're planning basically to see this job through to the end.
To the end, and it sounds like that could be a long time. Just how deep, how long should the U.S. be involved in Haiti? With us now from Arlington, Virginia, is James Dobbins. He served as special envoy to Haiti under President Bill Clinton. He's held senior White House and State Department positions under four presidents, most recently serving as the Bush administration's special envoy for Afghanistan. He's a director of the RAND Corporation's International Security and Defense Policy Center. James Dobbins, welcome back to On Point.
Thank you. Pleasure.
Also with us from Charlottesville, Virginia, is Robert Fatton, Jr. He's a professor of government and public affairs at the University of Virginia, born and raised in Port-au-Prince, author of several books on Haiti, including The Roots of Haitian Despotism and Haiti's Predatory Republic. Robert Fatton, welcome back to you as well.
Well, thank you for having me.
Professor Fatton, first to you. What do you make of the relief effort so far? Is the world doing an adequate job, a good job? Is it falling short?
Well, there are real complications. I think what you have to face is the complete devastation in Haiti, the fact that the UN mission, which was helping the Haitian government, was completely decapitated. The government itself, which was already weak, is now an empty shell. And the international community has yet to really organize itself in a coherent way. You've heard many stories of competition between the French, the Americans, etc. So I think this is taking longer than expected. And hopefully the problems of coordination will be sorted out quickly.
And James Dobbins, what grade do you give the world's relief effort to this shattered country so far?
I think people are doing pretty much what they can, given particularly the difficulties of access to Haiti, in part simply caused by its poor infrastructure, but also caused by the degree of destruction. I think it's important to understand how humanitarian relief efforts work, and they do appear, they always appear somewhat chaotic, but there is a certain logic in that chaos. That is to say, organizations, hundreds, even thousands of organizations, governments, non-governmental organizations, and international institutions swarm around large-scale disasters and provide a whole range of different sorts of assistance. There are efforts to coordinate this, and the UN is providing that central focus for coordination. But it is a process of swarming, and it is a quite effective process. The humanitarian relief is the one area in which the international community is actually quite effective. It's the one area in which international activities are adequately funded. People are generous. Interest and funding tends to run out when the immediate disaster recedes. But for the moment, I think people are doing as much as they reasonably could be expected to do. This is a massive effort, and you're beginning to see it pay dividends.
That's the short term. We've just got 30 seconds before a break, James Dobbins. How long do you think, first of all, just U.S. troops will be in Haiti this time? 19 years early in the 20th century. What about this time?
I think they'll be gone in a month or two.
A month or two. Nearly 18,000 in and around Haiti now. All of them gone?
I think that the troops in Haiti, as opposed to on ships, will be gone in a month or two. That's not to say there may not be a few hundred corpsmen or something there. But I think the UN force is being reinforced, and it will take over responsibility for security.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point here. An L.A. rescue effort in Haiti pulling up a survivor gives way to chants of USA. One rescue in a very, very big humanitarian effort. And you hear the shouts, the chant of USA, USA in the streets behind there in Port-au-Prince. We're talking this hour about the road to recovery in Haiti and how long and how deep the U.S. commitment there should be. We're joined from Charlottesville, Virginia, and the University of Virginia by Robert Fatone. He's born and raised in Port-au-Prince. James Dobbins joins us. He was Bill Clinton's special envoy to Haiti, 94 to 96. Later, a special envoy to Afghanistan for George W. Bush. You can join the conversation at 800-423-8255. James Dobbins, how do you anticipate the United States' role in this recovery and the longer road beyond the immediate needs is likely to unfold?
I hope that the United States will stay substantially engaged in a broad international effort. I do think that there's some important reforms that the international community needs to promote in Haiti, and I think it's important that these not have a made-in-Washington cast to them. So I'm hopeful that the UN and the World Bank will begin the lead in defining the reforms that are necessary and in setting conditionality for assistance in a ways that promote those reforms. But I think the United States should be contributing significantly, both in economic terms, but also using its political influence to try to ensure that those reforms are indeed adopted.
Robert Fatone, you may have heard with us Damien Kay from the New York Times in Haiti saying that a lot of Haitians are talking to him and saying, you know, don't just give the money to our government. They will steal it. We're quoting him here, that they're saying they want to be a protectorate or even a commonwealth like Puerto Rico. How do you see Haiti's relationship with the rest of the world, with the United States, evolving under the pressure of this reconstruction requirement?
Well, there is a key issue here for me, and it's related to who's going to speak for the Haitian people. Mm-hmm. We have a government in Haiti that is really an empty shell. We were going to have elections next month and in March, and those elections clearly are not going to take place. So I think what needs to be done in the Haitian terms is to find some sort of emergency national consensus. That could be done perhaps with a national conference. It could be done with the enlargement of the government, a national unity government, because we really need to have a functioning government in Haiti that can be the interlocutor of the international community. Otherwise, what we will get is simply an imposition from without of a program that probably will not make much sense given Haitian realities. After all, we've had 40 years of foreign assistance of World Bank, IMF, American intervention in two occasions, and the results are very meager.
Hillary Clinton in Montreal on Monday at the big international conference there on Haitian relief and the way forward talked about the U.S. role in the rebuilding effort along these lines. Here's a clip of her remarks from Canada's CTV network.
We intend to support the government so that this is truly a Haitian-led effort, one that responds to the aspirations and the needs of the Haitian people.
Maybe that's the way it will be, but James Dobbins, I mean, I'm looking here at analysis coming from correspondents who are down in Haiti, and they're saying, well, you know, one option is the UN takes the lead in rebuilding Haiti. Another is the U.S. in effect takes over, whether that's a good idea or not. Help could just dry up, or maybe there's help plus Haitians in charge. Which do you see really most likely? Without these elections, without Robert Fatton says it's a shell of a government, without a real operational government, how could Haiti take the reins for itself, or will it?
Well, I think, first of all, we have to decide what it is we want to try to accomplish beyond the immediate provision of food, water, shelter, and medicine. The next stage is rebuilding Haiti's shattered infrastructure, but it's important that that infrastructure be built on a more substantial institutional base. The real problem in Haiti, its real vulnerability to these national disasters, is not that it has poor building codes or weak infrastructure. It's that it has a weak government. That's the core problem. And so creating a stronger, more capable, more efficient set of institutional structures is, I think, the most important focus of medium and long-term assistance. This means it does mean building up the Haitian government's capacity to provide public services to its people, not just substituting for it. But in the short term, I think that the international community, the U.S., the other major donors, are going to have to set some conditions and promote some programs, ideally bringing along a large constituency of Haitians and gradually transferring authority and resources to that Haitian government.
Robert Fatton, I want to ask you about that because, of course, there have been institution-building efforts for a long time in Haiti, 40 years of foreign aid that you're pointing to and more. I mean, is there a better chance for institution-building now that the slate has, in a way, been wiped clean? Is it a promising time for that in Haiti?
I think there is an opportunity, but I think on both sides, the Haitian side and the international community, we need to reverse the old policies. From the Haitian perspective, clearly, the government has been utterly dependent on the external community, and it has been incapable of generating its own institutions. And the international programs, to some extent, have contributed to that weak state, because most of the aid, in many ways, was not channeled to the government. It was channeled through non-governmental organizations. So you have a government that has been emasculated. The liberalization of the economy has also had significantly negative consequences for food production and for the viability of an agricultural sector where the vast majority of Haitians live. So I think you need to reverse those policies. And if you look at the pre-earthquake period, there was a new plan, the so-called Collier Report, which really emphasized the old policies. What I mean by that is that it was a plan that was based on the export processing zones, whereby you export goods to the... Exactly. And that is okay up to a point, but it does not really represent the engine for self-sustaining growth. It is based very much on very cheap labor, and it tends to generate the exodus from the rural areas. And as you've seen in Port-au-Prince, this is a capital that was built for about 300,000 people, and we had 3 million people. It's because the rural sector has been completely neglected. Food production for domestic needs has been completely neglected, and that's partly the fault of the government, but also the fault of the international community, which has liberalized the economy and ultimately contributed to the destruction of that agricultural sector.
We've got a country flat on its back, widely leveled, with a lot of history here. And the question is, how long, how deep should the U.S., the world commitment to Haiti now be? And what should it look like? Robert Fatone, James Dobbins, please stand by. A lot of listeners calling in here. Francis in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Francis, you're on the air.
Oh, yes, sir. I just want to say I think the U.S. should be there, but only in aid groups, not in troops. And I think it's horrifying what's happening there. I saw the U.N. put boxes of food in people's hands and then take them away, and they're hitting them with pepper gas and with rubber bullets, and they're acting like they can't get down to the people. I see the food behind the reporters on the tarmac, and one of the reporters of CNN went up there and just took some food and went down. It's no problem at all, and they just have soldiers guarding the food instead of giving it to people. They're acting like the people were vicious criminals or something, and they're just hungry and thirsty like any of us would be if we were hungry and thirsty. I've walked the streets of Haiti, and I know the people are very, very kind.
But they're also very hungry, and we've read instances where they try to distribute food and it becomes a near riot sometimes. Also understandable, but not easy, Francis.
Oh, well, I know, but if they would give it out sooner and give it out to everybody, it wouldn't become a riot. They just put it in their hands and then they take it away, and then they tried to make them fill out applications, and most of the people can't read and write. They are creating the riot.
Yeah, no, it's a tough scene. You say not troops, but definitely aid and for the long term. Appreciate your call. Let's get another. Carmelis from Malden, Massachusetts. Carmelis, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom. How you doing?
Okay, what do you see?
All right, Tom, listen, I was kind of shocked. The other day they had a meeting in Canada.
Yes, Montreal.
The Prime Minister of Haiti got the guts to go there and say that, you know, Haiti can lead. Haiti can lead on what? I'm begging the community, the international community, please, 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 don't trust them with some money, because right now we have an earthquake, and after that, there's going to be a storm of corruption. Please don't give them a dime, because I spoke with my cousin 30 minutes ago. You know what he told me, Tom?
No.
He got tent. Like, he bought a couple tents. Those tents were given by United States for our people of Gunaïve.
Right.
People from the government sell them. And you see rice donated by Taiwan or China or United States. The people from the government sell them to people who want, like, stores and stuff like that.
And this is relief aid. Carmela, stand by. I want to get Robert Fatone on with you, because, Robert Fatone, you're saying the Haitians must lead, and that's... I understand that, but what about the fear of Carmelis and others of this storm of corruption?
Well, when I say that the Haitian must lead, I'm just saying that there needs to be an emergency situation whereby the Haitian people can have a voice and have some idea of what the process of reconstruction is going to look like and where it's going to lead. So what I'm talking about is, in fact, the creation of some sort of government of national unity. We all know that the resources are not going to come from Haiti. We are in desperate need of foreign assistance. But I think you need to build state institutions. As James Dobbins has pointed out, the key problem in Haiti are strong, functioning state institutions, the capacity of the state to reach the population.
So what do you say to Carmelis, who says, please, 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 don't give it to the Haitian government. Give it. You say don't give it to NGOs. He says don't give it to the Haitian government. What's to be done?
I think you need a process whereby there needs to be some sort of supranational entity that works with the Haitian government. And in the very process of reconstructing Haiti, you rebuild state capacity. And by rebuilding state capacity, you generate processes that are not as corrupt as before. But if you simply give the money to the international community and it comes in Haiti and tries to do it on its own, I think you're going to end in the same old cycle.
Let's get a call from Laz in Newport, Rhode Island. Laz, you're on the air.
How are you doing today, Tom?
Okay.
Thank you very much. I think this is a wonderful topic. I want to mention that I believe that we should be there for however long it's necessary, and for four specific reasons. First and foremost, if we're having problems creating jobs, there's going to be billions of dollars being poured into Haiti. That's a great place to send a lot of people in the United States that are willing to go anywhere for a job.
Though Haitians might like to have those jobs themselves, Laz, what about your other points?
That is true. That is true. But there aren't that many engineers, laid off engineers in Haiti. There aren't that many.
Okay. We got it. What else? What else?
My other point is that if once the country stabilizes, you know, we're going to be experiencing a huge influx of refugees from Haiti, a problem we still haven't been able to cure even before the earthquake. And then my final point is, you know, that's going to be a great prime ground for terrorism. Terrorism is born from, you know, poverty. And, you know, that's going to be a very big, huge security risk. And people like Taliban would love to get that close to us.
Let us pick those up. It's an interesting list. James Dobbins, how about it? Jobs for Americans, refugee threat, security threat. Are those on your list of reasons to be in Haiti for the long term?
I don't think Al-Qaeda is likely to make any inroads in Haiti since Haiti doesn't have a Muslim population. And I don't think there's much susceptibility to terrorism. In fact, contrary to the usual stereotypes, the Haitian population is really a very peaceful population. Mm-hmm. Indeed, the patience with which they've awaited assistance over the last couple of weeks. I mean, can you imagine if you'd had a disaster of this scope in Los Angeles and nobody had provided help for 2 weeks, what the situation there would be like?
Hard to picture.
I think we should drop that stereotype. In terms of large-scale immigration, I think that we probably should let in a few more Haitians than we usually do. But I don't see a large influx, frankly. Again, I don't think we should regard this as a burden. Haitian society is pretty dysfunctional at home, but Haitians, when they emigrate, are really ideal immigrants.
Yes.
They're hardworking. They're family-oriented.
Mm-hmm.
They value education. They're exactly what you want in terms of an immigrant community. So this is not going to be a burden. And what was the third of these?
Jobs for Americans in rebuilding Haiti.
I wouldn't overdo that. I think it's important that most of the funding go to Haitians, not to Americans. I think we have to accept some risk of corruption and diversion rather than spend 90% of our money within the capital beltway on organizations which will only provide a trickle of it to the Haitians themselves.
Robert Fatton, before this earthquake, I mean, Haiti's had problems for a long time, but there was a sense of optimism in Haiti that maybe some things were coming together, we're widely told. Does the earthquake wipe that away, or does it enhance the chance that Haitians may pull together in a new way after so many years of deep difficulty?
Well, I think it does both. And this is not maybe the answer you want to hear. But I think on the one hand, the earthquake is really an opportunity because we have such devastation. We've had an earthquake that, to a large extent, is a great social equalizer. And what I mean by that is that the very wealthy small minority has had to endure devastating losses. Clearly, they have more opportunities and more resources to extricate themselves from the crisis. But they've seen their family die, their houses collapse, etc. And they've been compelled to be with the vast majority of Haitians, the poor majority. You have sites of very wealthy people sleeping in the street for the first 2 days with very poor people. So that may have contributed to a change in the mentality. It may have contributed to really eliminate to some extent the great social apartheid that we have in Haiti between wealthy and poor. And if that's the case, maybe a new sense of solidarity could be used to forge a new social pact between Haitians, whereby we would have a different kind of politics, no longer that zero-sum type of politics that we've had in the past.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking this hour about the road to recovery in Haiti and how long and how deep The U.S. commitment there should be. Robert Fatone joins us from the University of Virginia. And James Dobbins is here. He was Bill Clinton's special envoy to Haiti. He's director of the RAND Corporation's International Security and Defense Policy Center in Washington. You can join the conversation. What do you think? Should the U.S. be nation-building now in Haiti? As soon as you step into a role like that, you may get some applause and some brickbats. Secretary of State Hillary Clinton lashed out yesterday at critics of the U.S. relief effort in Haiti after an Italian public safety official claimed the U.S. had, quote, no capacity for coordination and leadership, and criticized the U.S. military presence there. Here's Clinton's response at a State Department forum.
I deeply resent those who attack our country, the generosity of our people, and the leadership of our president in trying to respond to historically disastrous conditions.
You get out front, you're going to take some heat, but there we are. Wilbert in Allendale, South Carolina. Wilbert, you're on the air.
How you doing, Tom?
All right.
One thing we have to understand is that you can't rebuild a society from the top down. You have to rebuild that society from the bottom up. You have to get Haitian people involved in their own reconstruction. And also out of those could come political organizations and social organizations that could help rebuild the Haitian nation. The Haitian nation was put in this state, especially the agricultural section, by America, by rice farmers in Arkansas, who destroyed the rice agriculture in Haiti. The professor understands that. And that's what drove all these people into these major cities. America can't do that alone. We need to look to the Venezuelans, the Cubans, and the Haitians themselves to build an indigenous organization.
But the Venezuelans and Cubans are already criticizing the United States for being there with the military, Wilbert.
The Cubans are there as of now, as I speak, with doctors. They're involved in Haiti as I speak right now.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have to stop this whole boogeyman mess and began to rebuild the society and help rebuild the society in the interests of the Haitian people. And you can only do that by allowing those folks who was associated with Aristide. There was a young lady in Florida who lives in Little Haiti who was supposed to be running for Congress.
Mm-hmm.
Can't even go back to Haiti and help because she was pro-Aristide. All these political forces have to be brought back to the Haiti and help rebuild the country. And I'm very sure the professor from Virginia understands exactly what I'm talking about.
Wilbert, I appreciate your call. I'll go to Robert Fatone. But James Dobbins, first to you. For most of the 90s, the United States was really torn over the issue of Aristide pro and con, Democrat and Republicans divided on where U.S. support should be there. I mean, now there's even talk, you know, what if Aristide showed up again? He's talking about coming back. Is the U.S. prepared for the Haitian politics that may follow here? Is it prepared to help the Haitian people stand up from the bottom, as Wilbert says?
I agree on the importance of a bottom-up approach as well as a top-down approach, and I certainly agree that building institutions, local institutions in Haiti, is an important component of a program. The U.S., the Clinton administration championed Aristide and in the end was deeply disappointed by his performance. I'd have to say that the only thing that might be worse than another earthquake would be Aristide's return to Haiti.
Because?
Because he's a profoundly divisive figure. I think that what we have now, for the first time in a generation, a bipartisan consensus in Washington in favor of assistance to Haiti without the divisive rancor that marked American debates on this in the 90s. And we have a more united Haitian populace on this subject. Aristide's return would be profoundly divisive in Washington, make a consistent long-term bipartisan support impossible, and I think it would have a similar effect in Haiti.
Robert Fatone, what about the notion of a return of Aristide? Divisive or a rallying point? Is it even, do you think, a serious possibility?
I don't think it's a serious possibility insofar as you're talking about the constellation of domestic and international power. Frankly, to put it bluntly, I do not think that the French or the Americans would accept that, even though Aristide is still a very important political figure in Haiti. There might be other solutions whereby his own party would be more included in the current government, although the current government had already put in its cabinet two members of Famila Valas, but Famila Valas had been banned from the elections. So that, those are internal political factors that one has to take into the context of the situation. I wanted to add one thing, though. Mm-hmm. When you're talking about nation building, I think this is the wrong term. I think Haitians and Haiti is a nation. What we need is to build a state. And that, those two things are very different. Haitians know that they are one country. Mm-hmm. You don't have the type of ethnic divisions or the type of regional divisions that you have in other countries in the developing areas. So it's not a question of a nation. Haiti is a nation has been one for more than 200 years. What we lack are responsible state institutions that can reach out to the population and deliver basic necessities.
James Dobbins says he thinks U.S. troops will be gone within a couple of months. Do you agree, and would you welcome that withdrawal? Will it be enough to have the U.N. and maybe Haitian security on the beat?
I think the U.S. troops will exit. I think you probably still have Americans in Haiti in terms of engineers and obviously some military. This is a simple reality of the international context. If the U.S. were to stay longer with so many troops, I think that would spell trouble. I think they will probably do what they did in 2004, that is to say exit and help the construction of a Latin American, mainly Latin American body like the MINUSTAH that we have now, Brazilians, Argentinians, mm-hmm. Chileans, etc. I think that would be a much better solution. It would no longer have the kind of negative impact in the Haitian mind about the occupation from 1915 to 1934. And foreign assistance is obviously welcome. And I think all Haitians, irrespective of political affiliations, are desperate for that assistance.
And what about the American Treasury, James Dobbins? President Obama said last week, I want the people of Haiti to know we'll do what it takes. But he's going to be giving the State of the Union address tonight, and everybody's looking at the American deficits and problems with resources in this country. Do you think the American Treasury will stay open for the rebuilding of Haiti? Does the U.S. have the resources to get Haiti back on its feet along with others?
Well, I think this will be a broad international effort. I don't think the United States will have to bear the majority of the burden, although it will probably be the biggest single donor. I think Haiti is a relatively small country. Its absorptive capacity, that is a capacity to effectively absorb assistance, is also somewhat limited. So I think there will be an increase in American assistance levels, probably lasting several years. And in fact, Haiti was not receiving an insignificant amount of assistance in the last two or three years. Mm-hmm. Since Aristide left, the international community has been more generous. And the Bush administration and the Clinton administration and the Obama administration have been more generous. And we also have made some important trade concessions.
Trade concessions that might allow Haitian agriculture to come back, or on what front? Allowing their manufactured exports into the U.S.?
Allowing textile exports into the U.S. Haiti has a time-limited exception to otherwise U.S. regulations, which actually give it, for 10 years, the most favored access of any country in the world.
Robert Fatone would like to see that emphasis shifted back to agricultural production, which would require, some protection from American agricultural exports. Do you think the U.S. would consider that?
I don't think the U.S. would necessarily object to it, although some sectors in the U.S. probably would. If economists came to the decision that some kind of protective tariff on agriculture would make sense in Haiti's condition, I think it would deserve serious consideration. I'm not enough of an expert to know whether that would in fact work, and I doubt Haiti is going to be an exporter of agricultural products, with the exception of some specialized products, like, for instance, mangoes, where I think a little investment could yield significant dividends.
Let's get to our listeners. Greg in Fairfield, Iowa. Greg, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
My point is about education. I've heard that before the earthquake that there was 60 to 70% unemployment, and that I'm hearing that a lot of of Haitians are illiterate. Mm-hmm. I think that the long-term effort, and starting as soon as the rubble is cleared, would be to build schools. And I think that somebody that is an expert in designing earthquake structures could design some small type of school that would withstand earthquakes, and then have the Haitians in each community build their own schools, train teachers, let them become educated, they become self-empowered, then they can develop the kind of economy they want instead of having something imposed from the outside. And they could also, educated people will produce a better politics over the long term.
Greg, it's a beautiful vision. Who wouldn't like to see it happen? Robert Fatone, is that realistic? Can that happen?
Well, we have in Haiti a problem with the educational system. In other words, we have a proliferation of private schools that are not really teaching the population, but there is a desperate thirst for education on the part of the vast majority of Haitians. On the other hand, education has to be of a particular kind to be a positive force in the country. If you look at the Haitian society, if you look at the Haitian elite, it's a very educated elite, and yet it has really contributed greatly to the major problems in Haiti by excluding the rest of the population. So we need education, yes, but a different type of education, an education that would be geared towards the technical side so we can begin to reconstruct an infrastructure. I'm even afraid of using the word reconstruct because we had so little. Mm-hmm. I mean, to construct a viable infrastructure. This is extremely complicated, and my hope, as I said, is that we would have a new social pact. But if you look at past history, that doesn't bode very well for that outcome. But I hope that the shock of the earthquake can literally transform the thinking of Haitians, both abroad and in Haiti, and in particular the political class.
James Dobbins, are you optimistic about that kind of transformation? I mean, there's a very concrete example, education. Haitians want it. Robert Fatone says it's tied up in a private school system that doesn't really work. Who's going to come in and say, no, we're starting over here? Public schools, everybody in, let's build them town by town. Who can do that?
Haiti is the only country in the Western Hemisphere in which most children don't have access to free elementary education. And that needs to be corrected. The problem is not so much building new schoolhouses, although that's undoubtedly going to be necessary, mm-hmm. as creating a government infrastructure that can support an education system. That's not to say you should drive the private sector out. It performs an important function at the moment. Most children do go to private schools, including quite inexpensive ones, which are suboptimal but better than nothing. But the fact that the state offers almost no support for the education sector is a key problem. And so part of the international assistance would be rebuilding schoolhouses, but a larger part of it should be actually creating a system of free public primary education.
But that would require the kind of transformative politics Robert Fatone is talking about. Presumably the private schools will fight for their interest, their hold on education. Do you see that transformation as a real possibility in the sort of dust of this destruction?
I think the problem here is resources. I doubt that creating a free primary education would meet a lot of resistance within the Haitian political structure.
Great. Aki is on the line from Boston. Aki, you're on the air.
Tom, thank you for taking my call. Mm-hmm. Great program, like always. My only comment is that before we lay any block and build anything in Haiti, we should be building their social society, their government, be giving them the right advice, bringing the right personnel to help them in different ministries, in different places. So like the previous caller, so they don't end up taking all these aids in terms of cash or goods and then turn around and sell it. And I fully agree with that caller that we shouldn't be giving them a dime before we build their society and then simultaneously be building their infrastructure.
Aki, my note here says you're from Iraq. What's your experience on that front? Have you found the United States effective in doing that in Iraq?
No, not Iraq. I'm from Iran.
And excuse me.
Welcome your great programs coming up. I hope you have more coverage on Iran on their celebration of their brutality. that's another topic that we should be talking about.
We've got it, but get in and get a good government. Easier said than done. One more. Andrew in Ithaca, New York. Andrew, you're on the air.
Hello. My concern is that, going back to your original question about how do we respond, what should be the U.S.'s role in Haiti, mm-hmm. is to have a better understanding of our previous history in Haiti and how, in fact, our actions have created a lot of problems, I think, that we see there. And I don't think, I think we're giving the coup in Haiti in 2004 short change for its significance and how it's affected Haitian society, and that, in fact, we can't just dismiss. It's too easy to say, you know, let's just not consider Aristide and his supporters because they're divisive. But, in fact, we have to consider these things when we're talking about Haiti, and more importantly, that our role is what should be more examined, not necessarily looking at Haiti and its institutions, but looking at how we've affected its institutions.
Be aware of our history as we look at Haiti's history. Absolutely. Andrew, thanks for your call. Robert Fatone, final thought from you on, as a Haitian, how do you see the United States, I don't know, responsibility here or obligation? Is there one, and what's the basis? Is it in history? Is it in humanitarian interest? Is it in a better shared future? What's the obligation the U.S. might see here?
I'm not sure whether there's an obligation as such. I'd rather talk about solidarity. In other words, you have a country which is in desperate need. The past history between the United States and Haiti has been one that is full of conflicts. There's a love-hate relationship. Mm-hmm. I hope it's a basis of solidarity, and that will be a welcome change to past practices.
Yes, that is very true. Robert Fatone at the University of Virginia and James Dobbins at the RAND Corporation's International Security and Defense Policy Center. I hope you'll come back and look again at Haiti with us as things continue to unfold there. Thanks very much to both of you for being with us today, Mr. Dobbins and Mr. Fatone. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Listeners, thank you for joining us today. You can continue the conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thank you.